You just look at all the paint that's on her face.
You're just like, honey, did any of this get on the canvas?
It looks like she just like put it all on the canvas and mushed her face in it.
We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers.
You raise walls, I destroy them. Let's see who prevails.
Just because something works doesn't mean that it cannot be improved.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
It's the only way to be sure.
Allow my sword to join you in the fight against evil.
The world needs us to chase dreams.
We have to dedicate ourselves each and every single day to this fight because I can't do it alone.
You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us all unite.
Welcome to Skippy and Fanti at the Movies.
Where unicorns fart glitter sparkles, people paint their faces instead of canvas, and Samuel L. Jackson doesn't kill anyone.
It's too unbelievable. I'm Alex.
I'm Trang.
And I'm Stina.
And today we're here to talk about Unicorn Store, which is Brie Larson's directorial debut.
Woo!
So before we get started, if you love what we do on this show, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/skiffyandfanti or sending us a one-time PayPal donation to skiffyandfanti@gmail.com and or leaving a review on your favorite podcatcher. Every bit of support brings us one step closer to world domination. Also, we want all of your fucking Hugo votes. Do it!
Do it, guys.
Do it. Okay, so today we're talking about Unicorn Store. I'm volunteered to give the synopsis because why not? Let's see. So in Unicorn Store, Brie Larson is also the lead actress in, as well as being the director. And she is playing a lady named Kit who has just failed out of art school because she didn't read the brief. Instead of painting like a more literal interpretation of a self-portrait, she did like a really cool like color splashy thing with a unicorn on it. And her douchebag teacher who invented stick in a box, I'm sure we'll talk about that later, apparently decided that wasn't good enough and kicked her out. She goes home and she's depressed and she feels like a complete failure. And then she has like a weird relationship with her parents because she feels like a failure and she's projecting a lot. And then just as she's kind of decided the best way out of things is to become a temp, which is never the best way out of things other than, you know, like starvation, she gets a invitation that is really cool, and I wish I could make cards that look like that, that invites her to come to the store. And at the store, she finds one other person, played by Samuel L. Jackson, who is the salesman, and he has a very specific thing to sell to her, which would be a unicorn. That's where I'm going to stop the synopsis, because then after that we're going to get into, like, spoiler territory. So let's start off with kind of what are your general non-spoilery impressions of the movie? Stina, how about you go first?
I really, really enjoyed this movie. It made me feel very happy. I liked the sincerity and the vulnerability that was demonstrated in the film. I really identified with Kit and the whole thing was like really well acted, even though it was absolutely ridiculous. It made me remember what it was like to first try to go for my dream of being a writer, actually, because I honestly feel like this is like the whole thing is symbology for going for your dream. And I just kind of fell in love with Brie because she's just so sweet. But yeah, I really liked this movie. I really did.
All right, cool. What about you, Trang?
So I also really liked this movie. Not only did I like the colors and, you know, and everything, but I also really related to Kit because whatever she's going through is kind of what I'm going through right now in my stage of life. So, because I just graduated, you know, college and everything, and in that...
Mazel tov on that.
Yeah, woo! I'm done.
Yeah, no joke. Go you.
But, like, you know, it's like that weird time of, like, oh, I'm supposed to be an adult, getting a job, and, you know, and all that stuff. So I really, really relate to her.
My impression is, like, it, fairly positive, you know? I watched it last night. It was super cute. And I will say, I might not have been in the right frame of mind to watch this movie after being in the freezing rain and snow in a garbage dump, watching men drive 30-foot piles into the garbage. Might not have been, like, the best frame of mind to come home and watch this movie, but I needed to watch it. And I also think, you know, it might also be that I didn't quite connect as much with Bree's character because I am kind of at a different, much more bitter place in my life that we won't need to get into because we don't need a podcast of me whining about my problems. But, you know, generally, like, I thought it was funny. I thought it was adorable. It did a couple things I didn't expect. There was a lot of glitter, and I'm a fan of glitter. And, you know, so generally, I thought it was pretty dang enjoyable. It just wasn't, like, quite as much of an experience for me, and that's fine. With that as our general impressions, which seems to be like it's a movie that may hit you in the happy feels, and at the very least, it's quite sparkly and has rainbows. Let's go ahead and put up the spoiler wall so we can talk about very specific things in the movie. All right, so are there specific things that either of you wanted to talk about with this movie?
It made me laugh and it made me cry, which is like my favorite thing in the world with a movie like this. So that I specifically wanted to say.
Okay, which part made you cry, though? Because there was actually a part that made me cry, and it wasn't just because I'd had a beer at that point.
I think it's at the point where she gets that the big turning point where she thinks she's not going to have her unicorn and like it's all bullshit. Yeah, I think that was part of what made... What part made you cry?
Oh, I mean, it was when she... Like, okay, guys. First off, like, you know, and I mean guys in sort of the general all-listener sense and, you know, friends of all genders. Okay, they actually put a unicorn in the movie or, you know, a horse cosplaying a unicorn, which I actually did not expect. I was expecting them to be like, this is outside of our special effects budget, and it's always going to be sort of like the unicorn of the mind. But they fucking did it. And there is like this beautiful horse with a horn stuck to its head, and Bree has a moment with it, and then she's just like, you know, basically telling the unicorn all about her imaginary best friend unicorn from when she was a child, which is like, fucking stab me in the heart. And then she's just like, basically, all of the things that I went through to become worthy of you, I was actually becoming, you know, worthy of myself. And
ding, 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 ding.
I want you to be like my friend, but I know that there's someone else who needs you more than I do, so I'm gonna let you go. And I was just like, oh, God.
It's like right in the feels right there.
Ugh. All the feels, right in the feels. Boom.
So rude.
See, I'm a very easy crier, so I teared up a lot of parts, and I think the one part, not gonna lie, the ending was pretty like symbolic as well, but the part where Virgil finishes the house and then he's like, oh, your parents helped too, and all of her like artwork is up there, it's just like, oh, my heart right there, like everything that she's done when she was a kid till now, it's just like a walk down memory lane, and it was beautiful.
It's like these are all the things that make you special and you, and I don't know, I was also kind of expecting like for the movie to be sort of like, hey, Virgil was the unicorn all along.
I was half expecting that too, not gonna lie. I thought that was kind of it, but I guess not.
No, it's even better than that. Instead of it being all about the dude, it is all about her. She's yes. making this home, not really so much for the unicorn, but for the special place inside of her where all of her creativity lives. That's what that shed is about. It's about having a nice safe space for her to be creative and her in. And that was what totally endeared me to this film, because it demonstrates that whole struggle of not knowing what you want to be when you grow up, not knowing what you want to do, but knowing that you want to do something creative. And in my experience, the journey to being a creative person and finally coming upon the thing that you need to do with your life is this journey of misses, near misses. You start off for the one thing, and then it turns out that's not what you're supposed to be doing. And then you go off and you try something else, and then that's not supposed to be what you're doing. And then you go and you try something else. I tried so many different things before I finally settled on writer. But at the very, very beginning, I always wanted to be a storyteller, but I didn't think I could do that. So I started off as I wanted to be an artist. Then it became, oh, well, when that fell through, then I wanted to be an architect. So I went to architect school, and I went for a year, and that didn't work out. And then, you know, almost starved to death, but I had three jobs. It was awful. Three jobs, and I went to school full time. It was terrible.
Oh, God. No wonder you're still alive.
I'm 5'8", and I weighed 109 pounds by the end of that. I had to quit, or I was going to kill myself. So I stopped that and then gave up on that dream and then came up, you know, with something else. And until finally, writer was the thing, and then everything just magically fell into place. But that whole journey was all about me learning how to love myself enough to be creative, to support myself as a creative internally, because everyone has that horrible voice in the back of their head that says, you can't do this. You're not good enough. It's not going to work. But you have to have that shed to be able to, you have to have that safe place to be able to be creative. You have to be able to make mistakes and be okay with that and all that stuff. I just love this movie so much because of that.
I mean, one thing that I was just kind of thinking about, like the thing that kind of hit me, like the line that hit me the most was when Joan Cusack, which, oh my God, I fucking love that woman, she plays Kit's mom. But when she says the most adult thing anyone can do is fail at something they care about. And that line to me is so powerful on so many levels, because if nothing else, it just like completely like skewers the idea of, you know, ironic distance, because it's saying that kind of the ultimate act of adulthood is being willing to care about things that you know you can fail at. So that was like, holy crap. Just in one line. And I also felt like it was really touching on the way society actually treats artists as well. Because, you know, there's this sort of denigrating infantilization that happens where, you know, you're like, hi, I'm someone who does something in the arts. And someone's like, haha, when are you going to get a real job? And since employment is so inextricably linked socially with adulthood, in a way, it's kind of like, you're not a real adult because you're not doing, like, a real grown-up job. And you see, like, part of her struggle in the movie is with that idea, where she's like, you know, I got knocked down real bad with art, so I have to do something with my life because art is not enough of a something, so I'm gonna go be a temp, and then I don't want to be a temp all my life, so I'm gonna try to do, like, you know, like, a soulless office yuck thing. And what I found like so interesting about that also is that a lot of times her feeling of failure, which, you know, we're all very familiar with feeling like a failure from time to time, because that's just part of being human, but how she not only attacks herself with that, but the way she projects at other people, you know, especially her parents, where she's like, I feel like a failure, therefore everyone else views me as a failure, and I'm going to use that as an excuse to be angry and combative. And that really kind of struck me as well. And I don't know if any of these thoughts were really particularly well connected, but there we go.
Okay, so I, like I said at the beginning, I really connect with her because right now I'm at a stage where, you know, trying to figure out what I want to do. And like, job-wise, it's tough, obviously, like getting a job and all that stuff.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Woo! 2019, guys. But, like, you know, you're right. Like, everybody gets that feeling of, like, feeling like a disappointment, like a failure and all that. Like, I really connect on that because I got a job, but it's like a job that I really love, which right now I'm working at a local DC First Cat Cafe. So I'm enjoying that. I love the work that we do, and I love coming to work every day and, like, seeing all the cats and having fun. But to some, you know, it's like, oh, it's just a part-time job. You're working with the cats. You know, I feel like it's like the exact same thing that she's mm-hmm. going through, you know? And I also agree that, like, while watching this, especially at the beginning, like when she was kicked out of the art school because her art didn't reflect like what the assignment was, or it wasn't within what the professor wanted, it's just like really true to how art is like really hard for people to understand. Or I don't know, I'm trying to say that, like, I also like agree with whatever she's going through at the beginning too, because I took art, a lot of art classes in high school and all that stuff, and I was always trying to find my own identity, my own style, but like always having like a teacher or someone looking down at you and like judging your work. It was like, you have to do it correctly, but you can't do art correctly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have your own style.
Yep, it's subjective.
It's like this enforced conformity.
Exactly.
And it made me want to punch that guy in the...
Oh my god, I wanted to too. He was
But he invented stick in a box.
Oh my stick lord. In
a box. I can do that. I can put like a little fluff ball in a box and it could be viral. Like
whoop-de-doo!
Stick in a box, like, okay, cool. But I think she did something amazing. She even went past the canvas. She painted the freaking wall. Nobody did that. And yes. That's like, I think everything in this movie was just so, there's so much symbolism and so much meaning, and I loved it. And I loved her struggle to find herself, and the ending was just like her walking into that conference room with her glitter and her outfit. I was like,
oh yes, my god, that amazing
that
outfit.
That is who you are. You are not someone working at an office, at a temp job, trying to draw a vacuum cleaner. Like, what?
Yeah.
And it's like, be creative. I feel like what I pulled out of this movie, like the messages, it's like, be who you really are. Who gives a fuck about what people say? Just be who you are, do what you like. That's like what I took out of it in the end.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, there are a lot of movies that have that kind of message, but I felt like what made this one different is it said, be who you are, but it didn't say, and that guarantees success.
Oh, yeah, no.
And that I loved.
But what I loved, one of the things that they usually miss when they say be who you are is they usually say be who you are and then the world will come to you and pamper you and make you happy.
And it'll be perfect. But mm-hmm. No, it's not.
But it's not. In this movie, it's one of the prerequisites of being who you are in the world and not giving a fuck what anybody says to you about it is to have a safe place for yourself that nurtures you. And reinforces this idea that you are, in fact, special. That's what gives you the power to do the thing, no matter how many people tell you that you aren't worthwhile.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if this had been a more, like, less of, you know, like an indie movie, I can already feel like how someone would have written the scene with the vacuum cleaners, because it would have been like, she did the whole presentation, and everyone has doubts, and then she's like, more glitter, and then she, you know... win people over. But instead, I was just like, no, this is capturing the experience of trying to sell your work commercially when you're like, I went all out. And the buyer's just like, are you sure we can't just have like the sexy lady with the vacuum?
Oh my god, that part infuriated me. I'm sorry.
Oh no, don't be sorry. I think it was supposed to infuriate
oh,
you.
Oh my goodness. I was like, literally watching this, I'm sitting at my computer and I'm like trying to like roll, like, massage my temples, like, this cannot be actually happening right now. Like, they're really trying to pitch this, but then I'm like, but it is also a movie.
I just love the picture of, like, the lady in the sexy outfit with the baby.
And taking she's, like, a selfie.
Yeah, taking a selfie. And like, she's somehow, like, holding the vacuum in the same with the same hand that she's got the baby.
Yes, because, you know. And then, like, the buyer's like, oh my god, I want to look like her. Like, what? Excuse me? What do you mean you want to look like her? You want to drop your baby? Okay, go right ahead, please.
Right?
And I love. And obviously, because, like, she had, Brie Larson had to do this, but obviously it's two, like, macho-looking guys who are, like, you know, trying to advertise this. Of course they're gonna go for something like that.
Yeah, because, you know.
I shook my head. I literally was like, this is, oh, jeez.
Oh, God, it was an amazing sequence. That also just made me, like, squirm in my seat with so much secondhand embarrassment, because I was just like, oh, God, everything about this is so uncomfortable.
Okay, thank God. I'm not the only one that got that secondhand embarrassment. Ooh, I get it so hard.
My major is actually, my degree is actually in animation. And that whole scene completely reminded me of going through portfolio reviews.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And the dudes that would be like, sexy woman with almost no armor on her whatsoever. And then me in the audience going, okay, can you please explain to me why she has no clothing? Can you explain to me the reason
that is, why? That is all video game logic, and I, to this day, question why women portrayed are always wearing the least amount of armor when, logically, that would not freaking protect you at all. Like, how are you telling me that little tiny metal plates covering the breasts are gonna protect her from flying arrows or whatnot?
Well, because everyone knows that when you aim an arrow, you shoot for the nip. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah, oh my but the God. But it's even worse than that when you get into the engineering of, like, a full molded bodysuit armor like they do that shows the boobs, because it actually directs all of the energy of the blows into your heart. But we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, that's, like,
different topic.
Outside the purview, because, I mean, her jacket was fabulous. It was not armor, but oh my god, it was amazing. I did want to bring up the world's creepiest boss.
Thank you. Oh my god, I wanted to talk about that next.
Go ahead, because all I've got is sort of like an all-over body shudder and I need to take another shower.
I had to fight the urge to skip through all that interaction.
Oh my god.
Because I was legit just shuddering, getting like cold chills, because he had, like, a normal-looking face, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, that, like, you can tell right away, like, ooh, creepy, creeper danger, like, stranger danger. But then the way he talked to her and the stuff he was, like, implying to her, like, excuse me, are you gonna talk to her about her layers and taking them off? What?
Yeah. It gave me heavy flashbacks.
And then he smelt her hair and was like, to use coconut? I'm like, oh my god, just get away from me. I will legit smack you. Like, that's what I was feeling.
Pepper spray. Where's my pepper spray?
Where's my pepper spray in my pocket? Like, give it to me and I will use it.
When she says to Virgil, am I pretty enough to be sexually harassed? And then just, like, keeps going.
Oh, poor Virgil. Poor guy.
It's just like,
that whole series gave me serious flashbacks from when I was a secretary for a while. So that whole office job thing that sucked was really, you two would actually believe what things were said to me by bosses.
Oh,
that,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that whole thing was a heavy duty flashback.
Well, and the sad thing is, like, the very first time, like, their first exchange, when she's like, you know, has there ever been something you really wanted to do or something like that? And he just kind of says, you mean like wanting to be an ice skater and then, or a figure skater, and then your parents wouldn't pay for the lessons? And then he just kind of stares off into space for a minute. Like, that, just for that moment, I was like, oh, is he going to be like someone she interacts with, where he'll be like, you know, the dude that gave up his dreams and, you know.
That's what I thought too.
And then he went full creeper.
Yeah, I was having hope for him. I was like, oh, maybe this guy is, like, nice. I mean, despite him seeing her photocopying her hand and standing there staring at her. But, you know, I thought he was going to be
someone who she could relate to and have like good conversations with, but then he just took a nosedive and took a U-turn into the creepy lane.
Oh yeah.
Just pedal to the metal, accelerating down Creeper Highway.
Oh, he floored it. He floored it.
And I mean, I'm trying to remember was Brie also involved in writing this movie, or was it someone else? Like, I didn't look that up.
I am not sure. All I know is that she directed it. And
she directed it, but the writer was Samantha McIntyre.
Aha! There we go.
I knew it had to be written by a woman.
You knew! Yeah, exactly! Exactly!
You're like, oh, this is some personal experience in here, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like those moments in Captain Marvel where you were like, I can tell that part of the writing team was a woman when, you know, the shit happened, like the guy telling her to smile and then she steals his motorcycle. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that was great.
All right. Is there anything else specific about this movie that someone would like to talk about?
Yes. Parents. Her parents. Ooh. Are very interesting characters.
I loved her parents. They had their issues, but I still love them.
Her parents, and I believe it was Kevin.
Oh my god, Kevin. He's the guy from Deadpool.
Yes, he is. He was the taxi driver.
Yep.
I love it. I love it. I just love how their whole family dynamic, and then Kevin just comes in and like, hi, I'm the star, but I'm not their kid, but I'm also your friend slash not. I don't know. It was kind of funny seeing their interactions with each other.
Yeah, it felt like it was hinting at them having been friends, but they never really got into it. And I don't feel like she directly interacted with Kevin enough because she was too busy being like, stop trying to make me be Kevin.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like she's trying to be like her, but then her parents are like, look at what Kevin did. Look at what Kevin does. Look at Kevin doing this. And I'm like, okay, your kid is not Kevin, though.
Yeah, I felt like Kevin, I'm the oldest of four. I felt like because the Kit was an only child, Kevin took the place of that competitiveness that goes on between siblings and how your parents go, why can't you be like your brother? He's so much better. He's doing all the things we expect him to do. How about your sister? You should be like more like her. She does everything we've told her to do. She had the 2.5 kids in the yard in the white picket fence. Why aren't you like her? You know, that whole thing.
Yes, I totally feel. So I'm an only child as well, but I did grow up with two cousins. So, and I'm the oldest out of my, like, the cousin sibling stuff in my family. So totally get it. I'm always like, oh, you're responsible for this. Oh, why aren't you being like her? Or, where are your grades? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about my grades. And then they'll be like, oh, but she got like a 2 point something on her SATs. And I'm like, okay, cool. I didn't do as well, but I did it. You know, like I totally, that's why I'm like, I totally vibe with Kit on this whole movie.
See, I kind of wonder, there were times where like it felt, you know how when you do like a third person limited viewpoint in fiction, so you're just kind of seeing other characters as the viewpoint character sees them. Sometimes that's how I felt like we were seeing Kit's parents a lot of time.
Yeah, and I felt that too, yeah.
Which I think is really interesting, because I mean, I'm sure they were just being like, hey, look, Kevin, which is also just annoying no matter what.
Yeah.
But then when she starts trying to like talk to them more, and you know, like at first you get Kit's impression that what they do is just absolute bullshit. And then when she actually goes there and her parents are like, yes, we know they're lying to us, but we're trying to give them like a safe place where they feel like people will believe them even when they're lying. And it turns out to not really be bullshit. And then it's like Kit's mom is also the one that's like, you're not, you know, failing at something doesn't mean you're a failure. It means you're a grown up.
Yeah, that whole camping scene and just their whole argument, there's so much, like, in there, like, so much, like, emotions in there. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I really loved that.
It's a very chewy movie. Like, I mean, honestly, guys, just, like, talking with you about it has made me kind of respect the movie more, because it's like every time you start kind of examining something, you're like, wow, there's layers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, see it when you're in a better mood. Just see it again when you're in a better mood, and I think that you'll see even more.
I mean, I'll probably cry a lot more.
Well, yeah.
Instead of just at the end with the unicorn.
Yeah, the unicorn. No, I cried a lot in this movie, on and off, because it was just I'd have to pause it, and then Dane was in the other room reading, so I'd put it on pause, and I'd be, oh my god, Dane, this is so wonderful, I really love this movie. Okay, and then I'd run back to the other movie, and then watch some more.
Like, collect yourself and be like, okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, exactly, oh, no. Exactly.
I would like to bring up, or hear your guys' impressions of the, oh god, it was the salesman, right? That's what he called himself, the Samuel L. Jackson character?
Yes, I think so.
In the IMDb, he's listed as the salesman.
Okay, yeah. So him and his just amazing hairdo.
Oh my god, he had, what was it? Was it like the little strings in his hair?
Yeah, it was like little bits of tinsel that were kind of like wrapped up in his hair.
Yeah, I loved everything.
I loved him. He was amazing.
Samuel L. Jackson was brilliant in that. I mean, I think it was a combination of you have this set expectation of Samuel L. Jackson as being violent and like this toxic masculinity dude or just a badass dude. And then to see him all done up in glitter and like in the suit and just have him.
He's being goofy. That's what it feels like. It's like he's breaking out of his stereotypical character that we see him as, and it's amazing.
I loved it. I loved it. I thought he was awesome.
I mean, he looked like he was having a great time, and especially, like, those suits they put him in. Oh my god.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What did you guys think about, okay, so when she's always in the store and, you know, Samuel L. Jackson is handing her the files of the qualifications of having a unicorn, what do you guys think about that?
I loved it, because again, it was All of the qualifications for having a unicorn were actually all qualifications for being more whole yourself, so that you can be so that you can be creative, right? Those were all things that she really needed. All of the things that were required were things that she needed to be able to do for herself. It wasn't really about, for me, it really wasn't about the unicorn. It was about taking care of herself and being able to support herself so that she could create her own space to be creative. That's what all of that was about. I loved that she had phases and tests that she had to do. And
I mean, you could do a lot worse for a psychopomp than Samuel L. Jackson, basically.
Yeah.
What did you think, Tring?
Well, I also agree that like all of that was needed for her to be, you know, like her true self, to be able to open up about herself and, you know, needing the love and everything she needed. So I thought it was amazing and really well done. Like, just this whole concept of like the unicorn, but then that is actually reflecting her. And I just love all the symbolism in this. And it just made me feel so happy after I watched this.
Well, it's like her going through all of these tasks that he gives her so that she can be worthy of the unicorn, and then that tearful scene where she's talking to Steve is just like her being like,
oh my god,
I was the unicorn!
Oh my god, that like, when she was talking about like, Steve, I love how she named the unicorn Steve, that was so pure and so innocent. Oh my god, I loved it. And like, yeah, I teared up too, and I was like, oh, I can't with the feels, ah!
Yeah, I thought for sure she was just going to end up with the unicorn in the shed, and that was that. And but when she says someone else needs you, this other woman needs you, I'm going to let you go so that you can be her unicorn. That was just like, blam!
I know,
right to the heart.
Yep, like, oh, stab me in the heart and just like make me feel everything, please.
This is a very good movie for feels.
Yes. Also, did you guys like Virgil? Virgil was. Did he just feel like he was a love interest, or was he more? What do you guys think?
I adored him. I thought he was cute. He was sexy. I felt like he was just so sweet. And I felt like he could have gone either way. He could have been a boyfriend or just a friend in either way. But yeah, I really liked it. He was great. I really liked him.
Yeah, and he's kind of left in an ambiguous place. It's not like they were like swapping spit or something by the end of the movie. They just, you know, you can hold hands with your friend.
Yeah.
I feel like that it left it open for the viewer to make that relationship what you really wanted it to be, you know? And I really love that it didn't have to be a romance.
I think it's because for all that he didn't have the same amount of screen time as Kit, it still felt like Virgil was a character who had his own goals and who was doing his own thing, and he wasn't just there as kind of like, you know, a convenient person to build the unicorn shed, you know? So it's like when he goes and does that, it feels like it was really a decision on his part after he stepped back and examined his friendship with Kit after she'd had kind of that tantrum at him and, you know, decided that he was like, and you know, obviously he also got something out of this as well because he got to learn a new skill and he got promoted at his job and he got a friend out of it. So, I mean, I really liked him because he was just, especially as contrast to the creepy boss.
Yeah, exactly. I love the way it portrayed the whole concept that if you are working, if you've devoted yourself to your dreams and all that other stuff, that you can actually help other people with their dreams as well. It's not all about one person. It's more how we're all connected and how it can help everyone. That's how it came across to me.
Well, I think it very much did, because if nothing else, you know, she tries to take Virgil to the store and, you know, the salesman is like, it's not for him. That's why he didn't see anything. But then at the end, when Kit is saying goodbye to her unicorn, Virgil is there because he took that step and he kind of, I feel like maybe it was the fact that he was like, oh, fine, I'll learn how to do carpentry. And it turned out that he's actually like not bad at it, and like, you know, maybe he wants to continue with it. So like maybe he kind of found his own place and that opened him up to being able to see the unicorn as well.
I was just gonna say that. I was just gonna say exact same thing, like how Virgil Yes, I know you did.
Sorry.
Yeah, like Virgil was like struggling in his own way, and then through this interaction he was able to, you know, find his own unicorn. Air quotes around unicorn, but you guys can't see it because we're talking.
Yeah, because when she finds him, he's just kind of like, I'm sweeping the floor at this hardware store and I sort of, I'm full of irony and hate everything. Like,
yeah, like what was the guy that like, he like called him on the walkie-talkie and was like directing Kit to Virgil. And so their whole interaction was like really awkward at first, but they were both kind of like in the same place at the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it never kind of gets into Virgil's life too much, but you have to sort of say what's going on with someone when they're like, yeah, I'm like the assistant, or I'm not even an assistant, I'm just like the dude who sweeps the floor at the shop, and I'm dealing with this boss who hates me, and I am just kind of like sliding by. Like, how did he get to the place where he was just like, yeah, that's all right. I mean, we don't have the answer to that.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's because we never actually get to find out what's going on with his life, but I think there's the implication there that he's got his own issues.
He's got his own issues, yeah.
I think we've covered everything I wanted to say.
It was better stuff than I realized when I was watching it, and you guys have opened my eyes to that. I'll watch it again sometime when I haven't had a 12-hour day.
I do have one beef with the movie. Why is it when anyone portrays an artist, they always end up with paint on their face?
Oh my god, I wanted to ask the same thing.
If you've actually been an artist, you know you never do that. First of all, I was into oil painting. Half of that paint has got terrible chemicals in it.
Oh, you don't want them on your face at all.
No, no.
And oil comes, like, takes a long time to come off.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. Actual poisons are involved.
I mean, unless she's using acrylic, maybe.
Maybe. But still, I don't understand how artists are always portrayed as having paint on their face. Like, as much paint on their face as on a canvas. It's just, I've never known an artist to do that, ever.
Unless it's, I guess it's kind of like a stigma, you know, everything kind of has a stigma nowadays. So that's like the stigma with artists, like, oh, you must be creative, therefore you must be messy.
Yeah.
And that's not true, because every artist, like, works their own way, but I'm pretty sure people, like you said, paints have chemicals in them. You don't want them on your face. You don't want to get, like, third-degree burns or chemical burns or whatever. It's not ideal.
Cadmium is not a good chemical. It's a poison.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, on top of that, paint is relatively expensive when you're an artist, right? So waste it that way?
Yeah, I mean, like, the most equivalent thing I can think of is I have had a pen explode on me before, and it might have been, like, held between my teeth at the time, so I ended up with ink all over my lips, but that's really not quite the same.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, if you look at the picture of Brie on the Unicorn Store cover, right, you just look at all the paint that's on her face.
You're just like, honey, did any of this get on the canvas?
It looks like she just, like, put it all on the canvas and mushed her face in it.
Like, just rolled around in it.
Yep.
A bathtub of paint and just exactly. Rolled around.
Now, I do believe that it would have been accurate to show her, like, partially covered with glitter, because you saw her using glitter, and you know that shit never goes away.
That would have been more realistic, honestly.
So we've finished our specific things we wanted to screech about. All right, let's do final thoughts plus grade for each person. Who would like to go first? That isn't me, because I have to go last since I'm the host.
I give this movie an A. I thought it was amazing. I liked it a lot. I would totally watch it again. I had low expectations going in, I guess, and it really blew me away. I felt like it was well written. It's well acted. I believe the casting was spectacular. I can't think of, I mean, other than the art aspect, the paint on the face thing. That's the only thing I could even think of that was wrong with this movie. The pacing was great. Every moment where I thought I was getting frustrated with where things were going was exactly where she was getting frustrated where things were going. It was really well done. Really well done. So I give it an A.
All right. That's an A. What about you, Trang?
I think I'm also going to have to give this an A, because a lot of what Stina said is, like, what I agree with. But also, I guess, like, it's just really relative. Like, I relate to whatever Kit is going through at this time of my life. And being able to, like, watch it, and I felt more things that I thought, like, I wouldn't feel. But, you know, they start coming out, and then I just, seeing it represented on the screen made me realize, like, what I'm feeling, and I should be able to feel what I'm feeling. And I also, like, just love the casting. I love Brie, and I would definitely watch this again and probably even show my friends, because we're all, all of my friends and I are going through this difficult time of our lives.
Cool. And I mean, I'll admit initially I was planning to give it like a B, but after talking to you guys and having so much to think about and want to go back and watch it again, I'm actually just going to preemptively give it an A as well, because I mean, it is adorable, and obviously we managed to like just talk about emotional content for like 45 minutes, which tells you that the movie's got a lot more going for it than just, you know, the one unicorn. And also, I think that it deserves an amazing grade for Samuel L. Jackson's suits, because holy shit. So, hey, that's an easy average. It gets an A!
Woo!
All right, and that wraps it up for us. So, thank you for joining me to talk about this, Trang and Stina.
Thank you for letting us come on and talk.
It's not like I let you do anything. We're all part of the cast. I don't know. I just made it weird, didn't I? I don't know how I'm supposed to end this stuff. So we're not doing awkward endings because Sean isn't here. This is my rodeo. And all I'm going to say is, you're welcome, citizens. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
you would like to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty or find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, our webpage, skiffyandfanty.com, or you can even send us an email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. The intro music for this podcast was taken from Rock Thing by Creo. You can find out more about their music on freemusicarchive.org.